Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a Kesource production. In this episode, I chat with Bobby Samuelson of the Life Product Review. We discuss developing an idea for a business, the insurance industry, and finding your niche. This episode exists because of Kesource. Kesource is your content team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? That's what we do. Content strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at Kesource, we exist to help you create and share amazing content. And yes, you should have a podcast. We'll help you. Learn more by visiting kescontent.com. Bobby, you have an incredible story. You've been on quite a ride, as I understand it. So I want to talk to you a little bit today about the ride that you've been on and where you're going. So you told me a story a while ago that you started in business and here you are and you're trying to make some way. But take me back a little bit before when you're in college and you're trying to figure out what you want to do with your life.
Oh, man. That's way back. So I always wanted to be a real estate developer. And that was everything I ever wanted to be. When I got my license at 16 years old, I started driving around town looking at houses, looking at, you know, that's just what I loved. My dad's been in the insurance business since the 80s. My granddad was in the insurance business since the 60s. But neither of them really ever told me what they did for a living. So insurance was not something on my radar. So I was in college, 2007, had a couple of job offers in the real estate business, thought that I was going to go do that. And I don't know how else to describe it other than that something did not feel right about the real estate market in 2007.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So lucky me.
That's good insight.
It's very good insight. Very lucky. And I was actually graduating a year early from college. So I kind of made the decision to graduate a year early and go into the real estate business. So I ended up actually turning down two job offers from firms that actually later on went bankrupt in the crisis. And finally talked to my dad and said, hey, Dad, what should I do if I'm not going to go into real estate? And he said, well, have you ever thought about the life insurance business? And I said, absolutely not. You know, is that what you do for a living?
Yeah, that's right.
But I was an econ major, so I was I was triple majoring in business, accounting, and economics, and I graduated a year early with just an econ major. And I had a real math background. That was, you know, my favorite part about economics was the econometrics side of it, and my favorite part of that was statistics. And so I went into insurance kind of blind to the fact that I think I had a pretty natural skill set for it, but until that moment when my dad brought up life insurance, it had never crossed my mind.
So you get in the insurance business, right? I mean, so many people say, well, how did you get in the insurance? Well, I kind of just fell into it, or I got tricked into it, or
yes.
You know, or someone was in the family and they just started, I have to do insurance.
Right.
You kind of went a different route with it. You get into the insurance business, what was it like right off the bat?
Yeah, so I got in, like you said, everybody falls in a different way. I didn't fall on the sales side. So I went to go work for, at the time, the largest distributor of life insurance in the country. And I was going to do a rotational program where they would sort of, I was a test case. So they basically said, we're going to make you an intern and you're going to rotate through and then you're going to go back and work with your dad and sell life insurance. We're going to kind of train you on the technical parts of the business before you do that. So my first day on the job, I was in the product area and I remember sitting down on the computer and pulling up this application called WinFlex, which I'd never heard of before, obviously. And I ran my first life insurance illustration and I fell in love. And it immediately was apparent to me that these are complicated financial instruments. They're not really insurance policies. There's a lot more to them. And that there was just, I don't know how to describe it other than there was at the time, it felt like an unending depth of things to know about when it came to product. And also, it was pretty apparent to me, too, that not a lot of people in the life insurance business were product experts. There's a lot of people who were good at selling it. There's a lot of people who knew how to underwrite it. There's a lot of people who sort of understood the corporate side of it. But people who really loved product and devoted themselves to the study and the practice of life insurance product, I didn't know many people like that. But that was me. I knew right away that was what I was supposed to do. And so they kept trying to rotate me through the program. And I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, I don't want to go anywhere else. I am supposed to do life insurance product. And so that's how I got into it. And so, I can honestly tell you from day one, I fell in love with it and really honestly haven't looked back since then.
Yeah, I just used the word before, insight. And so you get insight when you walk into the real estate companies. You're like, something's wrong here, something's not right. I remember walking in actually to mortgage companies because I was getting all these job interviews
right.
At the time. I think it was between jobs. And I was like, well, I got a lot of mortgage interview jobs. I must be really ready to do this. And I'd walk in and like,
the amount of people in the room, it was like boiler room. And I was like, well, I can get a job here. Then you kind of walk out and you're like, something's not right. I don't know what it is, but they shouldn't be hiring this many people. Right. I actually had a job at DLJ Direct early on in the .com era, and the same thing. And every day there's like new training team company or new training people coming in.
Yeah.
Didn't seem right. Again, bottom fell out there, mortgage business. So I thought maybe I did have some good insight, but you're taking this insight to the next level when you get into the insurance business. And you're looking at WinFlex Web, and for people that aren't in the insurance business, WinFlex Web is like the main hub to run any permanent illustration.
Yep.
And here you are, you see it, you love it, and then you take that insight to the next level and say, wait a second, there's no product specialist in here. And I can vouch for that, right? You know, there's someone at an insurance company, they might have a product specialist that knows their stuff, but you're talking about product specialty in the entire marketplace, right?
Yeah, and I didn't see anybody in that spot. I also didn't see people who just loved it the way that I loved it.
Right.
You know, there are people who knew about product, but they didn't really. I was, you know, all my friends were still in college, right? I was living in a brand new town. I had no friends. I was not married. I didn't know anybody. And I literally just remember, going to the office on the weekends sometimes just to run illustrations, just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's how much it captured. I remember dreaming about it. I mean, I think most people it takes. You know, they graduate from college and just kind of plugging away. And for me, I became immensely interested in what I was doing. And I think that's, so I had the insight, but I also had the interest. And that kind of, I think for a lot of people, those two things.
Match those together.
Yeah, a lot of people, those two things don't come together. But for me, they came together right away.
Well, that's the true entrepreneur, right? Where you just, whatever it takes, you're going to figure this thing out. Yeah. Even if that means you have to dream about life insurance illustrations, which most people don't do. But what you did is you started creating your own category.
Yeah.
So we can go into the insurance business and you immediately fall into, you're an insurance agent or the real estate business, you're a real estate agent and you're doing what everybody else is doing, but how can you do it differently? So you get into the product space, you start working on it, you obviously love it, which obviously we talk about all the time. You have to have a passion for what you're doing, hopefully, or you just and happen to be really good at it and have a skill for it. You get into that business, where does that take you next?
Yeah, so I worked at that company for a couple of years, and then what I realized was that, to your point about kind of being a new category, the category I saw for me was a support structure for high-end life insurance producers. So for people who are not familiar with the space, they think of life insurance salespeople as sort of selling simple term insurance products maybe. What we worked with, the people we worked with primarily were ultra high-end life insurance producers, people that you knew from your days, you know, and these guys, and they are mostly guys, are selling, you know, very large, complex insurance transactions for estate planning purposes or business planning or whatever. And they're really good at selling, and they're really good at explaining life insurance conceptually. But when it actually comes down to doing the analysis and putting and choosing a policy and designing a policy, they're not great at that, right? Those are two very different skill sets. And so I saw this new category, which was, why don't I work with these ultra high-end producers? I'll take a percentage of the commission, and I'll do all the analytical work for them. I'll go visit the client with them. I'll explain why we chose this policy over that policy. I'll find anomalies in the products and help that sort of fit into the planning structure that the advisor wants to use. And so I figured that would work, and then I quit my job to find out if it would work for real. So I left and started this little company that did that. And I signed up, I think, 7 or 8 kind of big producers to be my retainer clients. And I started working on it. I would basically just get cut in on cases. And so, like you said about new categories, I mean, the new category I was trying to invent was sort of a market for being a product expert, which worked, you know, pretty well. Like, pretty much right away, I think there was an acknowledgement that, hey, there's not a lot of this going on in the industry. There's just not a lot of product experts. And so these independent producers saw a need for it. And it was an interesting little business model that I started out with.
Yeah, so companies start hearing about this, right? Because now the carriers are starting to get wind. Here you're out doing these things, and all these other big companies are out there. What is this guy up to?
Yeah.
And you start meeting them probably at events, right?
Yeah.
And you start having conversations with them, and then what happens from there?
Yeah, so I did get a little bit of notoriety because while I was at the insurance brokerage firm, I worked a lot with producers while I was there, but I also became an expert in this product category that nobody knew about and nobody cared about, called Index Universal Life, which at the time was like, I mean, they literally gave it to me because I was the intern and no one else wanted to deal with it. But it's an interesting product. It's got a lot of, it's got a lot of derivatives angles to it. It's a more complex life insurance policy than usual. And so that got me interested, obviously. And so your point, once I left, I started talking about that product and sort of got asked to speak at one conference about the product, about IndexedUL, and the company started to take note. And I suddenly realized, not only can I work with producers on sort of individual cases, but maybe there's a category in this business for an independent commentator on life insurance product, which there isn't one. There wasn't one in the life insurance business. And so when you look at investment management or annuities or other, really any other kind of industry, you almost always have sort of an independent voice on what's going on in that business. And there wasn't, that didn't exist for life insurance products. So I realized pretty early on, I think that there might be a role for me as an independent voice into the product side of life insurance business. So I spoke at that one conference. Somebody at that conference asked me to speak at another conference. And I went to go speak there, and they paid for my travel and my hotel. And someone came up to me afterwards and said, "Hey, I want you to speak at my conference. What do you charge?" And I was like, "Oh, I can charge to speak at conference." So I said, "I don't know, like maybe $1,000." And he was like, "Done. By the way, you need to charge a lot more than that." And I was like, "Oh, this is actually a business." And I had never thought about public speaking as a business. So you kind of fast forward over time, and I ended up doing, hundreds. I think I've done over 500 speaking engagements at all sorts of different conferences in the insurance business. But again, to your point about creating a new category, there was no other person doing that, being an independent voice on life insurance products. And I kind of like fell into that. I didn't realize that it wasn't obvious to me there would even be a niche in how I would make money doing that. But literally, I just spoke at a couple of conferences and realized, I can literally make money as a public speaker.
Right.
Going around and talking about this stuff.
You created attention in just whatever it is that you were doing at the time. People took note of it and said, "Hey, we'd like you to speak." And we always talk to entrepreneurs about, like, you never know what that next thing might be. Stay in the game.
Yeah.
Stay, keep being creative with everything. And you never know when it's going to happen. And it's funny. I think I told you this when we met last time is, I think we said it was San Diego, but I'm sitting in the last row of this huge conference. And I think there's probably 600-700 people in the room. And I'm in the last row. I got there a couple minutes late. And some guy sits next to me. We chatted, said hello. And the next thing you know, they called the keynote speaker up. And you get up and you walk up to the stage. And I was just like, "Wait, I was just talking to that guy." And I had no idea at the time. He happened to be from Charlotte. I was from Charlotte. Yeah. And then, I think we kept hearing about each other. And like, "Hey, let's connect some more." So yeah. I saw firsthand the speaking. And I remember you getting up on stage and talking to a few guys. Like, well, he really knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And this is unique to the industry because not a lot of people are doing that.
Well, and I think at that conference, I was the ripe old age of like 26 maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the other thing, is I was the youngest guy. I mean, you and I were probably the youngest guys in the room,
right,
by a pretty good margin. And yet, if you're an expert in something, age stops mattering.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
How do you handle that? Because the insurance industry it's an aging industry. And, not a lot of younger people coming out of college are saying, "Hey, you should go be in the insurance industry." No. That's not the word, quote unquote, sexy enough to go into that business. Go into real estate, go to be a financial planner, go build a tech company, all these different things. But all of a sudden, there's this open market, right?
Yeah.
There's this white space in the insurance market, which you saw, and now it's still there. How do you look at the insurance industry today compared, and we'll get back to your a little bit more of the journey, but how do you look at the insurance industry today compared to maybe when it was your dad's, when he was in his prime?
It's a great question.
And he probably still is in his prime, right?
But yeah, I think so. He definitely sees it differently than my granddad even saw it. So my granddad's a classic sales guy, and he was extremely successful selling insurance, but his main skill set was the sale. He was a great salesman. My dad is really about the process, and most of his business comes from professional advisors. And so his attitude is, "I'm another professional advisor. I need to have it." In the same way that an estate planning attorney has a clearly defined process, I need to have that too for my business. And so he's really all about the process. And then you kind of get to me, and I'm really more about the product. And I think it's just different sort of lenses on the insurance business that all work in different types of markets. So I think what the market needs has changed. I think what works in the insurance business has changed. But like you said, I think one of the biggest problems we face is that not enough young people are getting into it because they see that, it's a boiler room sales situation. Well, I don't want to do that. I want to go do something else. Well, the reality is insurance doesn't have to be that. There's a lot of different ways to get into it. And I think what it showed me was there are a lot of ways to get into an industry. There's a lot of ways to get into insurance. And for me, a lot of my friends would ask me, they'd be like, "Wait a second, you're getting paid to speak at a conference and you're the youngest person there. How did that happen?" I'm like, well, you got to realize, guys, all of you went to go work in the investment banking business where everyone's as smart as you are. That's where everyone goes.
Right.
So no matter how big of a fish you are, right, it's a very crowded pond. I went into a world where nobody young is coming in. And that creates an opportunity in and of itself because it is a viable industry and it is a real part of, financial services world. It just doesn't attract a lot of young, interested people. But I'm seeing more, though. I feel like, you know, when I first got into it, I was really young. I didn't see anybody my age, and now I'm a little older, you know, mid-30s, and I'm starting to bump into some very successful insurance people. And they are, to your point, they're doing it differently than my dad did it. They're doing it differently than my granddad did it. And they're being, and they're really successful. And part of the reason, we've all talked about this, you know, part of the reason why they are successful is because they don't have any competition, you know, because there aren't a lot of young people getting into business. So to me, that smells like opportunity, you know. I understand why people go to where all the smart people go, but there's something to be said for going where everybody else is not going. One of my best friends runs a trash business, and he's been very successful with his trash business. Well, that's because nobody wants to get in the trash.
Right.
And he's made a killing on the trash side of the world that you would never think of because it's not sexy.
Yeah, which goes back to the whole thing about insight, right? And having and the vision of, wait a second, I can go here, and I can do well, and I can enjoy what I do.
Right.
You have to have both, right?
Yeah.
So it has to work that way. So going back to where you were on your journey, you're getting paid to talk, you show up to these conferences. Did that continued for a long time, of course.
Yeah.
And then you start seeing different ways to continue to refine what it is. I love to use the word refine because we're, as entrepreneurs, we're always looking to, how can we refine our business? How can you update it? How can you grow into something different? When did you start doing different things as you're speaking, as you're going to these different events?
Great question. So the producer side of my business, I let that kind of atrophy because it was a very high touch, very involved, time consuming part of what I was doing. The payoff could be great, but at the end of the day, it wasn't what I really wanted to do full time. So I loved the speaking thing, and I realized, to your point about refining, okay, how do I refine this so that I'm doing less kind of producer work and more speaking and things like speaking. So I don't remember when this happened exactly, but at some point I was flying, you know, over 100,000 miles a year. And I realized I'm on the airplane all the time. What should I do with all this time? And I've always loved to write. And so I thought, you know, maybe I'll write this free blog that will fuel into more speaking engagements. So I started doing that, and I wrote, I don't know, 3 or 4 posts. And I wrote a particularly nasty post I was too young to realize you don't poke the bear, right? So I wrote a nasty post about a very big insurance company, which I was right.
Right.
But it didn't matter. It was still a nasty post. And something like 7,000 people read it. And I thought, oh, this is interesting.
So you said 7,000 people read it. Where did they find it? Was this only on your website?
People started, I mean, the life insurance business is a small world.
Right.
And I wrote a nasty post about the number one life insurance company in the independent side of the world, and it got passed around like wildfire.
So what, it was a link to your website that people were sharing around?
I just made like a little free blog on
okay.
I called it like the Samuelson Design blog.
Yep.
I knew any branding, any marketing, whatever. I just sent a few. I'd written a white paper that had been broadly distributed earlier that year. That was my first kind of experiment into writing. So I think I sent it to the same distribution list who had read the white paper or something like that. So then I thought, well, you know, all right, I got all this time on airplanes. I love to write. I wonder if I can monetize, you know, written content. So if people are paying me to speak, maybe they'll pay me to write too. So maybe a month later, I worked with a web developer, rolled out a subscription-based website, set the price at what I thought was a ridiculous amount that no one would pay, and God, I'll never forget, Eamon Walsh was my first subscriber. He subscribed 5 minutes after I wrote it, and I called him and said thank you. And it ended up being a really successful, not particularly time-consuming endeavor that I loved. And so basically my life then became speaking at 100 or 120 or so engagements a year, flying 200,000 miles a year, and while I'm in the plane, I write blog posts.
Yeah,
and that was pretty much the business model. So I'm not an entrepreneur in the typical sense that I had a bunch of employees. I was a solopreneur who, to your point, was just trying to refine that business model to where I could get paid. This is what I always said: I want to find ways to get paid to think, write, and speak. And whatever way I can get paid to think, write, and speak, or any combination of that, is going to fall in my wheelhouse. So that started to include, you know, work with life insurance companies. They hired me to do consulting work, all sorts of things like that too. But again, trying to refine it down to just speaking, writing, thinking, and getting paid for that.
Focused. Like, you were completely focused.
And it was all product.
And finding the time, I always say that, I tell John, who's in here as we record this, and I wrote some articles recently, and I sent them, and there was like 7 articles, and I'm like, get me on a plane more often, because everything's blocked out, and you have to do it. It's either that or just sit there and stare at something, or I didn't want to watch a movie, you know? And that makes a lot of sense. And there's 2 other things that I see in there is, people always talk about, well, how are you going to get on social media, and how are you going to do this, and how are you going to do that? Well, the bottom line is, that's all important. There's no doubt about it, but good content wins. So if you write something that's good, it's got a chance to break through. There's a lot of noise out there, so it still might hit 2 people and then stop. Okay,
right.
That's fine. Just keep going. And then not to say, let's just go create something polarizing to be polarizing, because we know a lot of people that do that. Yeah. You just state how you truly believe about something. Maybe stay away from the politics or some of the, unless that's what you're into, right? If you're in the political world, hey, by all means. But if you create something where there might be two sides to it, that's okay, as long as, like you're saying, you're the expert and you can defend your thesis on that.
Yeah, it's a fine balance that I had to learn the hard way. So there's a difference between, so I agree with you about good content. I had a lot of people say content is king. I would hear that a lot. And I say, well, why don't you invest more in making good content? You're just copying stuff other people have written. So for me, it's like, okay, how do you create good content? What's the definition of good content? And to your point, it's that I have to believe it, but 9 times out of 10 for me, that's creating original analysis. So I spent, it wasn't just like I would sit on the plane and write. I mean, I remember most plane trips, I was crunching numbers, I was reading through insurance company statutory filings. I was like an investigative reporter trying to find the angle that no one else was talking about. And honestly, if I look back over my career has been made by 3 or 4 things that I realized before they were public, that I talked about, that no one had ever heard anyone talk about before, and that's why I got hired to be a speaker. Yeah, I mean, I'm moderately entertaining, like I'll throw a few jokes in here, but at the end of the day, people hire me as a speaker because they know that I'm gonna get up and show something that they have never seen anywhere else.
Yeah.
And that's because I'm putting in the hours and hours and hours and hours and hours it takes to create really original content. And that to me was the key to everything I was doing, was trying to really get an angle that nobody else had. Not because I wanted to just do what nobody else had done, but because, again, there's not many people in the insurance business who are asking the kind of questions I was asking, and so it wasn't that hard to find something that, for example, you know, back in 2012, this was product Guaranteed UL, and everyone knew that it had some kind of complexities beneath the surface. Well, I actually started reading and cataloging all these obtuse contract language, and what I realized was that there was some really nasty stuff buried in these contracts that literally no one was talking about, and I started talking about it, and companies actually had to make official responses to it and change their contract forms, but that was because I put in the time for the original analysis.
Right, you didn't just throw that out there one day hoping it would stick.
No,
right.
And that's what people always ask me, like, aren't you worried about getting sued? I say, yeah, of course I'm worried about getting sued, but that's why I do the analysis.
Right.
Because if you're going to come at me, you got to prove that I'm factually incorrect, and it's my job, the hours and hours and hours I spend on the analysis, to make sure that I'm at least mostly factually correct. And if I'm factually incorrect, I would, and I had to do this a couple times, I would write a post recanting a previous post,
right,
and say, hey, I was
prove
wrong.
Me wrong, right?
Yeah, or no, I would even say, I was wrong. Here's what I got wrong. Here's why I got it wrong.
Right.
And here's the conclusion now that I fix it.
Yeah.
And once companies realized that I would do that, they wanted to work with me. They would call me up and say, hey, you didn't really get this part right or whatever. And that ended up being immensely helpful, having those relationships.
Well, and that's being humble enough to know that, first of all, you knew that you knew what you knew, and you were able to put it out there and feel good about it. And of course, people are going to make mistakes, but you're humble enough to know, well, I can fix that. I can make that right.
Yeah.
And I think that's something, but going back to your earlier point, is you had to put in the time and the effort. This is not something you just thought about, you know, glossed over and then just sent it out there. You're hours. But like you said, like you're in your 20s and you're going home and you're running illustrations. Like,
yeah,
you have that in you. Not everybody does.
Not
right?
My life. Yeah.
Yeah. So to create the content, you have to put in the time behind it. You have to really think, you have to get deep or emotional, whatever type of content you're creating. If it's analytical, if it's in, you know, educational, or if it's whatever it might be, maybe it's just entertainment, but really think and get deep in it.
Yeah. And I think that was the big thing I saw, was just people want authenticity. For me and my brand, authenticity is analytics and unique content around that. I think a lot of people get that wrong with content creation. They go for stuff that people can find elsewhere. And I don't know, maybe that works for some people. But for me, it was always about being authentic and not copying, like taking what's good from other people, but building on it myself.
Yeah.
And putting my own. I've had a lot of people offer to write for me over the years, and I'm like, you don't understand. If I don't write it, it's not me. And if it's not me, people don't care.
Right.
So, no, I appreciate the offer, but I don't want a ghostwriter.
Right.
For that exact reason.
And you need, and they want that third party, that independent source of someone who's really, they trust you at this point, right? They know who you are, they like you, they trust you, they'll know, like, trust. And then you're able to put that out there. And at a time, I feel like if you go to Amazon or Google reviews, for example, and I just want to buy a product, I want to buy a microphone, I want to read reviews about that, I want someone who doesn't work for the microphone company to tell me what their experiences were with it.
Yeah.
And maybe for a microphone, I can get 500 reviews. For a life insurance policy, maybe I only can get one because there's only one that exists.
Oh.
But in a time where trust is everything, like maybe more than everything, you come out with the life product review on these life insurance contracts that people can say, I can get my third party and, you know, feelings on this. And then I can still make my own decision. Maybe I read something, you're like, no, I disagree here or there. That's okay. You're just giving me the facts. And now I can do something with that. So I think at the time where Amazon's growing, Google's growing, and you listen to it, look at a podcast, there's reviews in the podcast, so I can learn about it. Maybe not all those reviews are the right reviews, and you know, maybe they're family members, all that kind of stuff. But that's the point of reviews just in general, I think, makes sense. When you say the life product review, it's like, yeah, it's good timing. Doesn't hurt either.
No, yeah, I totally agree. And at the time of the insurance business, things were getting complicated.
Right.
So it was the right time for someone
right.
like me.
Well, they needed trust because the industry was losing trust because their products weren't, you know. I've had multiple calls with very large insurance companies, and let's say it was a policy from the 70s or 80s, and I couldn't get anybody on the phone to answer the questions that I had until they found someone in the basement and they got on the phone and then we worked it out together.
Right.
But it was complicated. They were losing trust at the time, and agents were losing trust, and you know, there's Dateline specials or whatever to show that they were putting out there for some of the annuity contracts that existed.
Yep.
And people, they needed someone to come out there that was trustworthy and that could put out this type of information. That's what you've done.
Well, and I think the biggest thing to your point about trust is, so you're right. If people agree with me, disagree with me, that's beside the point. The main thing is that I'm putting things into light that were otherwise hidden in darkness. And if companies have to publicly correct me, all that means is there was more information now in the public than there was before. And so, you know, my main goal is for the life insurance industry to grow and thrive. And I think the only way it does that is if people trust the products. And if me, and I'm the only guy out there calling insurance companies out more or less, and if that forces insurance companies to be more transparent, no matter how wrong I am, no matter how much anybody disagrees with what I said, if the truth gets out, and again, things that were in the dark come to light, that is good for everybody. And insurance companies won't do that unless they're forced to do it. And so I think in a lot of ways, my career has been forcing companies to go into the light on things that they were not comfortable doing, but ultimately were better for the industry because they finally did go to light. And you gotta have somebody out there who's willing to kind of stick their neck out a little bit, and that's what I did. And, again, in my 20s, I didn't know any better. And now in my 30s, you know, with the next iteration of life product review, I'm a little more careful. I'm a little less bombastic, I'm a little more analytical. It's a lot less my opinion and a lot more just the facts. And what I found is that's the right tone for the times now.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of have to adapt with what the overall vibe is in the industry. And for me, being bombastic in my 20s at the time, where the industry was absolutely the right thing. Or I'd say absolutely. I think it was probably the right thing. And now I need to be a little more mature and a little more measured in how I approach some of these topics.
Sure, sure. So, as you continue to refine, right?
Absolutely.
Just keep growing with it. So,
absolutely.
So life product review is doing well. We'll give the link at the end so people can go if they want to subscribe to the Life Product Review. I think that would be awesome. The material on there is it's different. It's unique, and you've not seen this anywhere else. So we use it at CatSource on our insurance side of our business, and I know a lot of other advisors out there, brokerage groups do the same thing. So I would encourage anyone to at least check it out, get the executive summaries, right, that you have, and learn more about the business, learn more about the reviews that you're leaving out there. What's going on for you going forward? I mean, because what I've seen is this tendency to continue to refine your business, and that's what we look for in entrepreneurs. So life product reviews can continue to go. I'm sure you're helping out other advisors that exist in the marketplace today.
Yeah.
Any exciting changes that you see maybe overall, either within your own business or within just the industry as a whole as it grows? I mean, we've just seen a lot of changes from the whole life market, and you mentioned Index UL before and Guaranteed UL. Like, what's that? That was 5 years ago. It's like the biggest thing ever. Now what's going on? So what do you see going forward from here in the industry?
Yeah, so I think my business is a creature and a reflection of the industry as a whole. So I can't talk about my business and how it evolves independent of how the industry's evolving.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what you're saying.
Yeah.
So I think the industry is in a really interesting place. You know, whereas the rest of the financial services world is going towards low fees, simplicity, transparency, the life insurance industry is going towards high fees, high complexity, you know, low transparency. And I worked at MetLife kind of for the last 3.5 years in between my stints doing the life product review. And when I left MetLife last year, almost a year ago today actually, I wasn't sure I was going to want to do the life product review again. I didn't know if the industry needed it. And so I spent about 6 months kind of poking around trying to figure out, okay, does the industry still have things in darkness that need to come to light? And is there still a role for someone like me to do that? And the answer was resoundingly yes. So I think our industry has got to get to simpler products, more transparent products, more information in the public sphere, you know, lower fees, just alignment with where the overall financial services industry is going. And when that happens, I don't know if you're going to need a life product review anymore. For the time being, I'm going to keep writing about all the crazy stuff that's coming out in the market. I mean, you know, like every new product that comes out has some weird wrinkle in it that requires someone like me to spend hours and hours and hours trying to figure it out.
Should it be that way?
It should not be that way. I didn't want it. I mean, I love doing a life product review, but I wish our industry was so simple and so transparent that you don't need me to do this. But instead, there needs to be someone like me. I mean, the example I use is back when I did the life product review back in like 2012, 2013, it would take me, you know, 5 hours to figure out a product. You know, it's a couple of wrinkles here and there. I've got a bunch of proprietary models I build. I put it in there and usually pretty straightforward, and I'd write the review and be done. Now, I mean, one review for one product has probably taken me over 100 hours for one particular product. You know, the final result was like 25,000 words about the product because it's that complicated. It's that undisclosed. There's that many moving parts. I had to build an entire model to replicate the product in my own Excel spreadsheet to figure out all the things that they weren't telling customers, and then write cohesively about how they work and what that means. And unfortunately, most products that come out these days require that type of analysis. So for me, the life product review, you know, as long as the industry insists on making highly complex, you know, low transparency, high fee, high leverage, high illustrated performance products, I'm gonna have the life product review. I would love to, in 5 years, close it down and say, hey, we're in a better place as an industry. We don't need an independent arbiter the way that we used to because these products are so simple and straightforward that you don't need someone like me. That would be my hope. You know, right. I don't know if any entrepreneurs like hope for their own obsolescence, but I think...
But you're going to refine anyway, so it doesn't matter.
If I took it
away from you today, which I'm going to do in a couple minutes, we'll do a real quick rapid-fire approach,
yeah.
I'm going to take it away, but that's what you look for. You try to say, what's going to put me out of business?
Absolutely.
And you're okay with that because you're like, I took that away from you. Well, you just go create something else.
And it's obsolescence on my terms. It's like, it's obsolescence the way that I think it should happen. And yeah, I will have planned for that long in advance, you know? And so that's where I think the industry will get there. I think there's going to be some lawsuits. I think there's going
to
be
to be, because what you're saying is, if it takes you that long and you've done this for a while, so, you know, there's other people out there that know what they're doing too, but let's just say it took you that long to understand a product. So I'm gonna take it as some salesperson in some insurance company somewhere is gonna call themselves an expert of that product when, yeah, maybe they've studied it a little bit, but there's just no possible way they could have taken it to that level.
No way.
Because they're under, you know, they have to sell so many product to keep their job.
Yep.
So that's a scary thing. It's frustrating in the industry, and I talk about this all the time. We're in the insurance and marketing industry, and I'm like, it gets a bad rap, both of those industries, and being in these industries for long enough for a good reason. Because I see the bad that happens as a result of people saying things that just aren't true.
Yeah.
And that's it's frustrating. And then you see clients, they're like, well, they're so turned off and have such a bad taste in their mouth because they've been burned so many times in a row.
But it also means for guys like me and you, we also see the opportunity to do good.
100%.
And I think that's the thing that keeps, I mean.
It's we say that, and I agree with that. Now that's become a cliche that people, I know you've been burned before. It's like the guy said it to the girl, right? Like, I know you've been burned before. And
but I'm different.
But I'm different. I'm the one, you know, but it's true. Like, if you can be genuine and prove it, and that's what it is, proof of concept. Because you could say all these great things, and I could go read your life product review, and I'd be like, this is terrible. It's not, by the way. But I could formulate an opinion on it. And then, but it's proof of concept. And I read it, I'm like, no, this is really good stuff.
Yeah.
He told me this, it's proven itself out. I talked to other people, they feel the same way. Now it starts to add up. It's just like your speaking engagement. It just builds. You plant seeds and it just grows from there.
But to your point, it's gotta be authentic, it's gotta be real. I'll tell you a quick funny story. We were in a sales situation recently, my dad and I were working on a big case. And there had been another agent who sold a ton of policies they should not have sold to this family. It's like over $300 million of insurance that should not have been there. Or it should have been very differently. It's like, so it'd be like buying a Ferrari to go like off-roading. Like, it doesn't, not the right car.
Yeah,
put the Ferrari on the track, okay, buy a Ranger.
And that's your thing, by the way, right? Is using cars
and
analogies.
Cars analogy. Yeah, I ended up doing car analogies a lot. But we had a meeting with him, and the turning point in the meeting was when the CEO of the company, it's all corporate and stuff, looks at me and goes, now tell me about that dividend rate. Because all of these guys come in here and tell us about the dividend rate. And I go, yeah, it's made up, it's garbage. And he dies laughing, he goes, I knew it. And from that moment on, we had credibility, and it was authenticity, and it was like all he needed was somebody just to sort of give the nod that, hey, the insurance business has its wrinkles, and we're here to help you navigate that. Totally changed the end. You know, they hired us for the engagement, all that kind of stuff. So that's where I kind of go back to saying, I think authenticity matters a lot. And in the insurance business, authenticity goes a long way to dispelling all the negative stuff you're talking about. And that's what keeps me in this business. I mean, every year I'm like, God, why didn't I do something else? And every year I'm like, yeah, but the opportunity is so good.
This is it.
If you're willing to be authentic, there's such opportunity.
Yes. So well, we appreciate it. I mean, we appreciate your honesty, not only on the podcast, but just in the business and bringing insight to us.
Thank you.
It's needed, like you said.
One of my favorite things about CADSource is the opportunity to chat with amazing business leaders and entrepreneurs. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn or visit us at CADSource.com. Thank you for listening to this CADSource production, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. This episode is brought to you by the CADSource brand Podcast. Podcast is your podcast production team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story through audio? That's what we do. Podcast strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at Podcast, we exist to help you create and share amazing content through podcasts. Learn more by visiting podcast.com.